You want me to start it?
Okay. So tonight is the 7 p.m. UK time, Monday All Addictions VBA call. And tonight we're going to be listening to a recording of Father Mike on steps 8 and 9.
Actually, I'm just going to correct that. Is just step 8. I thought it was both.
Oh, sorry. But step 8.
There it is.
There you are.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. And some people know me as Father Mike. I'm an Anglican priest and not a Roman Catholic. And I tell people we're close, but not exactly the same. So what I tell them is I'm married and I have 2 kids. And my bishop knows. I hope that's not too snarky. At any rate. So here I am. My sobriety date is June 18th, 1977, and I only saw a VBA way of doing things just, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago. I just love the approach of going through the book. I mean, that's how I cut my teeth on it way back. I like to tell people that the basic ethos, the essence of doing the work according to the book that you see in VBA, is really the way I was brought through the work. You go through the big book with your sponsor. They told you to identify, don't compare. There used to be big book meetings in New York. They go through the whole book, I mean, including all the way through the personal stories. Read a paragraph, people would reflect on what it meant to them and how they reflected and internalized it for their own lives and shared around the table and kept moving. You see, it's not all that different. What seems really innovative to me about BBA is the inventory work on 4. It's brilliant. It's great. It's a great. It's a great evolution of the basic setup. I would have to say that the big book comes up a little short on the 8th step in particular, and what that's about, and what I thought might be useful to share with you tonight. I'm going to treat it kind of like in a workshop-y way, of not so much my experience per se and what I get out of it and that, but I want to share with you some things that have come my way over the years of how to do it, you know, useful ways. You've got this set of spiritual tools. This is one of the tools. So I'll share my experience with this tool, you know, and other things that I've brought along with it that I found really helpful, you know. One of the things that comes up, needless to say, 8 didn't come out of nowhere. There's obviously 7 steps ahead of it. But more particularly, you're doing an inventory step. And we've had a serious inventory step in 4. We've continued to inventory with our sponsor to get the exact nature of these wrongs. And part of what happens along the way, I have to say this up front, you know, there's an intention to the work where we've got to stay on our own side of the street. It's so important that we not get into finger pointing or blaming others, you know. And I can't argue with that at all. It's very, very important, especially in the beginning. We're much more likely to blame others and take a good, long, hard look at ourselves. Now comes the big however. However, at a certain point, when you're doing inventory in 4 and 5, and you're getting the exact nature of these wrongs, what is underneath your anger? What is underneath your reactionary, explosive temper? Fill in the blank. Your fear, your compulsivity. What's underneath these things? What's the exact nature? And we can say fear. All right. But you know, my friends, some people have been traumatized early in life. And I tell my sponsees at a certain point, stop asking yourself what the you know what is wrong with me and ask yourself a different question and say, I wonder what happened to me. I wonder what happened. What happened to me? I tell them when you come into an ER with a broken leg, They ask you, what happened to you? They don't say, how come you're so effed up? You know? And And some of us have walked in and bad things have happened to us, which sometimes shatter us and give us emotional twists and lead us to patterns of behavior that we continue sometimes unconsciously for the rest of our lives. And actually right now, I'm just talking the language of the eighth step of the 12 and 12. I think Bill, 15 years later, figured out a few other things were going on here. So I'm just saying that, and it is within the realm of the big book. You know, if you look in the big book, as early, I think, as page 19, if I'm remembering right, it says that there's going to have to be a discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious, of necessity. We absolutely are going to have to do this. And something I'm very quick to do with the people early on is to refer them to page 133 in the family afterward. It says there, try to remember that though God has wrought miracles among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and in following his case afterward. It's very interesting. It says their services are often indispensable. Well, to be indispensable, it cannot be dispensed with. It's absolutely going to have to be there. And to say often means, frankly, they're saying most of us need to be treated from the time we're a newcomer and to be followed afterward by a doctor or psychiatrist. What on earth does this have to do with making this list of people? You know, if you're bogged down by all kinds of other things that really need to be taken care of and haven't, it gets very hard to own stuff. When some of these people you're looking to make amends to very often have been part of a family system that have hurt you more than anything or anyone else in the entire world has to date, and now I'm making a list to make amends to them, that's a hard road to travel. And so, you know, you want to be sensitive to people and help them get some understanding here, you know, before they're subjecting themselves, frankly, to this. Very tough. And so, you know, more help, not less. And some of you have been in AA meetings a lot. They'll tell newcomers, don't see a psychiatrist or psychologist. And it's the exact opposite of what the big book says. There are all kinds of things. I think some of you are fairly sophisticated and know that. And over the years of doing this for 40 years, I'm trained in pastoral counseling, of course. I'm not a trained psychologist, but what I'm fairly good at is picking up the signs of something so I can make a recommendation that maybe they want to check it out with a psychologist, if that makes sense. But I'm not going to treat them for depression or bipolar or whatever, or trauma. But I've begun to become fairly adept at sort of seeing there might be an issue there and tell them to go in for screening. So if you're working with people, I tell you, no, without being too pushy and not you telling them what's wrong with them, but if you have an inkling, turn to the big book and say, see, since most of us need some help here, why don't you get a mental health screening just to make sure? Great many alcoholics have a problem with depression. You know, it's not a personal thing. It just tends to go with a lot of this. And so I would say, you know, make sure some of this stuff is taken care of or at least addressed, because otherwise it's going to be hard to do this step, which requires so much humility and willingness and moving in. And I might as well drop the other shoe. I've had people who were in abusive relationships, and I tell them, fine, be willing to make amends and don't do it. I would never recommend anyone go back to an unrepentant abuser because they wanted to own their side of the street. I just tell them, I don't. We'll pray on it. We'll do whatever we have to do. But, you know, until that person has had some sort of spiritual experience and recovery themselves, please don't do that. It could be very dangerous. So, just so you know where I'm coming from, I'm sharing from my experience, you know. And be very sensitive when you're dealing with people and walking through this. I don't think it's a walk that most of us should be doing alone. Doing the eighth step is something that's a very good thing. Once you've done some of your homework, share it with someone you trust, whether it's a doctor, psychiatrist, or step guide, but it's a very good thing to get counsel on. So That's it. Now I'm going to tell you how, when I'm going about this, what I get at, okay? One, what kind of harm can we do? Well, we have a physical, mental, spiritual disease. I also add emotional. And I say, I need to look at the harm I may have done to a relationship. What physical harm have I done? What mental harm have I done? What emotional harm have I done? What spiritual harm have I done? It's interesting, people often don't think this way. They don't think of their mom, you know, and think, what spiritual harm, what on earth could I have done? Let me give you an example. I knew a guy who was an alcoholic and a heroin addict, and had a mom who really cared, and had a dad who was, has his roofing business, and he's doing what he can. And once we got into it, I asked, what physical harm have you got? That includes financial. So I mentioned some money. I said, okay, so maybe you should pay them that back. Of course, once we got going, we started adding up some other financial stuff that needed to get in there. So that's it. So he hasn't any other physical harm. He said, well, no, I never raised my hand to my mom or dad. I said, well, you don't have to. He said, what do you mean? I said, you can affect their physical health by the stress that you put them under. I said, do you know how bad it is for your health when your sleep isn't right? Do you think they lost sleep because of you? Do you think your stress caused them to have high blood pressure? Yeah, I started going. I said, oh my God, yeah. I remember my mom, and he started telling me stuff. I said, there you go, buddy. And it had never occurred to him until we got thinking about it, you know. We can literally make people physically sick because of our shenanigans, depending upon the people and how close they are to us and how much they care. Mental harm. I mean, once we got going, the guy started going, yeah, no, I'm getting it now. The mental harm, all the worry, all the times in her head, she's just caught up with all this other stuff. You know, Paul, is he in jail? Is he dead? You can imagine. And of course, the emotional harm that's happening. People start hating themselves, thinking they did something wrong in raising the kid. The emotional harm it can do to a relationship of a mother and father. They start arguing. You're being too light on the kid. You're being too hard. We should give him the money. No, we shouldn't. If he dies, it's on you. Are you getting this? It's like he started thinking, I owe him $500. What's the problem? No. It's like, no. Mental, emotional, spiritual. You know, people can give up on God because of a drunk or an alcoholic or an addict in their life. They give up on God. I've been praying to God for years to save my kid. He finally OD'd and died. The hell with it. And so their spiritual life as well. So I bring that, you know, because we're meant to be really, really thorough. And this is one way I found of getting really thorough with this stuff, is to go through it that way. The other thing I have to add quickly, though, is why it helps me to have someone else to run this by. I will go over it with a sponsee sometimes, and I'm trying to find out what is the harm you did in certain relationships. And it becomes hard to figure out. And there really isn't a harm. They feel bad about it. But, you know, some guy who breaks off from a girlfriend and all of that stuff and didn't exactly say goodbye or leave a note or whatever. And not to get into too much gallows humor here, but sometimes I got to believe it was the nicest thing you could have done for her. You know, I don't think she was that upset. You know, I don't think she was writing country western songs about how broken her heart was when you finally left, you know. And so we have to have a reality check there sometimes amid the times where we are destroying people's lives and we are a tornado running through it. Other times our ego leaves us thinking that that was a great big deal. And actually, they either don't remember it even happened or certainly weren't counting on you to show up for the prom anyway. You know, didn't ruin anybody's night, you know. And so there are those things, too, that are best discerned with someone else as you're going through the list and putting it together and deciding which ones you're going to take action on, you know. So that's another thing which I mentioned before about bringing in counsel. There's another thing I like to do. I will look at issues I have to make sure that the offense that I had, as I can understand it, the nature of what was driving me to the behavior that hurt the other person. And this can be very helpful to me. And part of this has to do with the psychological. So I could have someone maybe that once I discerned what the thing was that so upset me with them that I did something antisocial. Once I began to understand maybe that I was traumatized early on in life, and when they do those things, they're triggers. It helps me to detach from looking at that person as the bad guy or the bad woman. It makes it easier for me to put in perspective what they did and to not make them the great big problem. Not that they may be scot-free, but it's much easier for me to say, given my sensibilities, given what happened to me as an individual, given that none of that was ever treated, of course I got that upset when she said that. Whereas in my head before is, how could she say that to me? And I have no ownership of how I took it and reacted. So the self-knowledge in this case, from the previous inventory, getting down to what counts, frees me up to make a very genuinely felt desire to make amends in this relationship. Because I know my part in it. And sometimes my part in it doesn't have to do with an action. It has to do with my emotional and mental state, which I'm not even aware of. I think I'm normal until I show up at AA and start reading the book and find out just how crazy I really am. And it tells me that we think that the truth is a lie and a lie is the truth. And their definition of insanity. Things that should be small, we make big. Things that are big, we don't think are a big deal, we think they're small. And that is nowhere truer than in my relationship with other people. Sometimes a certain slight from the quote unquote wrong person just destroys me. And it shouldn't. What's a big deal? The big deal has to do with what happened to me and what's going on inside me. And once I begin to understand that, it helps. And finally, the single most important thing that has helped me truly move with a spirit of forgiveness towards other people is coming to a deeper understanding of them. A deeper understanding of me helps me to a deeper understanding of you. One of my biggest roadblocks to forgiving people, and I'm talking about my parents, talking about my brother, is that I don't see them as human beings. I see them as mother. I see it as a father. I see it as a brother. I don't see them as Helen, who came from a broken family, whose mother had her out of wedlock at the age of 16, back in like 1907. Can imagine what that was like in New York, whose mother always rejected her, because her mother was always ashamed of her. Am I filling in enough blanks? You know? And until I got better and could see these things, I didn't see my mother as a human being, that things had happened to her. And likewise to my brother, and likewise to my father. And when I started seeing them as broken human beings with their own hurts, I started identifying with them, and they became fellow human beings. And all of a sudden, a lot of the ice around my heart melted. And God filled it with grace and forgiveness for them that was real. It wasn't feigned. I wasn't working at it. I, honest to God, felt for them. I had real compassion. And once you have compassion, it's so easy to forgive. And that forgiveness and compassion will drive you to want to make amends. And there's no doubt in my mind that what the big book says is so true. The primary thing is to make us fit for God's service. nothing will open you up to the light of God, like finally forgiving people that has been impossible to forgive and moving toward making amends. Whether you can make amends or not doesn't matter. God honors intention, honest intention. And you find a liberation that you never had before. To me, it was like boulders getting pulled out of the stream of life. And now the stream is just running pure and clear and strong. Didn't even realize how much was being blocked off. So that's where step eight led me. I mean, the amends is sort of the after thing. But the real internal changes happen by doing, making the list and becoming willing to make the amends. That's where the gold is, to my mind. Anyway, that's all I got for tonight. Thank you all for letting me share. And I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say. That's it.
Thanks for that, Amy. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording because we just record the speaker, not the shares.